The lettering of the law, a font for all time.
I think the font of our time is all fonts. I think it's the range of possibilities that is available.
Yeah, but when you have to choose just one font to run for leader of the free world, what does your typeface say about you, your administration, how you would handle Vladimir Putin or some kind of nuclear crisis with Iran? Obama versus McCain, a type face-off on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 25th. Good morning, John. What's your font?
Good morning. My font. Yeah, you know, all fonts. All fonts.
All of them?
I love the wacky ones. I love them all.
Good. Well,
Garamond, actually, if you must know.
Okay, I like Ariel, just so you know.
All right.
Today, the presidential campaigns and the unprecedented $700 billion plan to save Wall Street have collided. Senator John McCain has called for a suspension of the presidential campaign while the deal is worked out. We have a report from Washington. We'll also hear from a small business owner, get voter reactions, and have a profile of a very important county in the very important state of Virginia. And rubber duckies to the rescue for NASA scientists on a new mission. Those stories are coming up, but first these headlines.
In boldface and underlined in a television address last night, President Bush said Congress must pass the proposed bailout plan soon or else America could slip into a, quote, financial panic.
More banks could fail, including some in your community. The stock market would drop even more, which would reduce the value of your retirement account.
The president has called John McCain and Barack Obama and other Republican and Democratic leaders to meet at the White House this afternoon. In his testimony before a House Banking Committee yesterday, Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson conceded on a key sticking point for Democrats on the bailout plan. He said the plan would include provisions to limit CEO compensation.
This comes as John McCain says he's suspending his campaign to deal with the financial crisis. McCain's campaign also called to postpone Friday night's first presidential debate unless Congress can approve the bill. Obama wants to continue with the debate as planned. He says a president needs to be able to do more than one thing at a time.
The State Department has banned all U.S. personnel in Pakistan from staying at or even visiting major hotels in key cities. There are fears of new attacks after a deadly truck bombing at the Islamabad Marriott on Saturday.
At Guantanamo Bay, a military prosecutor has resigned. He says his office withheld potentially exculpatory evidence in the case of a detainee. The current chief prosecutor for the tribunals denies the claims. Delta and Northwest Airlines may become the world's largest airline carrier. Shareholders are expected to approve a merger today. This is the third major air carrier combination since April.
Oil's down near $104 a barrel today. The markets are in a wait-and-see mode. The Dow and the S&P closed flat yesterday. The S&P begins trading today at 1185. So John McCain says he's going to suspend his campaign. He doesn't want to take part in the debate unless there's a bailout plan, and he's come to Washington to make it happen. Is it a stunt or the right choice for the country? Are debates a diversion, or does America need to hear the candidates right now?
And is Barack Obama right that a president needs to be able to do two things at once, which is exactly
like walking,
why
chewing gum,
writing proposals,
right.
Signing bills, which is why he says the debates should go forward.
What do you think? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Our entire economy is in danger. So I propose that the federal government reduce the risk posed by these troubled assets and supply urgently needed money so banks and other financial institutions can avoid collapse and resume lending.
That, of course, is President Bush addressing the nation last night, his first ever primetime speech devoted exclusively to the economy. And it's just one of the major political shockwaves radiating out from Washington this September morning. We're going to get instant voter reaction to the speech and to issues in the political campaign from Andrea Bernstein, who's in Northern Virginia. But on Capitol Hill, Democratic and Republican lawmakers have been meeting throughout the night to hash out a deal on the $700 billion rescue plan. The economic crisis has clobbered the presidential candidate debates, or maybe it's just the McCain campaign. John McCain is saying he will not show up at tomorrow's presidential debate unless a bailout passes. Joining me now to look at all this is our Mr. Chips in Washington, Todd Zwillick of Capital News Connection. Todd, thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning.
Lots to think about and talk about as far as lawmakers are concerned. They're working on this plan, but they're also seeing the fallout in the political campaign, and they listened to the president's speech last night. What's the reaction there?
Well, what the president... From where I sit on Capitol Hill, what the president was really doing was what lawmakers, especially his own Republican lawmakers, have been asking him to do since Monday or Tuesday morning. On Tuesday morning, Vice President Cheney came up on the Hill with Josh Bolton, the White House Chief of Staff, to rally the troops, to get them all in a big room, say, we know this is not what you want to vote for. We know this is a massive government intervention. We know this goes against your conservative free market principles. We need you. The country needs you. This is a crisis. And what many of them said to him is, Mr. Vice President, this, you know, 95% of mortgage holders are paying their mortgages and have not foreclosed. The foreclosure rate is 5%. Now, that's high, but 95% don't have any foreclosure. People in Omaha, Nebraska, people in Oklahoma don't think this affects them. They think this is a bailout of the fat cats on Wall Street. That's how they, many of them, unfortunately, that's how they view New York. You know, it's a bailout of fat cats and aristocrats. The president needs to give people an understanding of how this affects them so that we can vote for this without them sending us out on a rail. Otherwise, we can't justify it. Well, it's a tough vote anyway, but we can't justify it unless you explain to them what this potentially means for them. And I think that's what he was really trying to do.
Well, and to that end, listen to this excerpt from the speech, and then I want to talk to you about whether Bush is on message here or maybe feeling a little bit out of touch.
Ultimately, our country could experience a long and painful recession.
Now, that's if this bailout doesn't pass. I'm wondering if, from the perspective of lawmakers who are in touch with their constituents, and many of whom are actually running for re-election, if they feel there's a lot of people out there who think we're already having a long and painful recession.
And you walk a very fine line, and lawmakers have said this. They said, you know, the fine line is, like we said, the president has to make a very clear case about how this affects people. The downside of that is the clearer and more salient case he makes, the tougher the case he makes to vote for Republicans, and much more seriously than that, the tougher the case, you know, he could cause a panic. You know, if the president goes on and says too much, you could have a bank run or something. Now, nobody's necessarily afraid that's going to happen today, but that is the line that they consider. It has to be serious enough that people say, okay, member of Congress, hold your nose, and we'll let you survive if you vote for it, versus... Oh my God! Did you hear what came out of the president's mouth? I'm getting my money out of these institutions. So that's the line they're walking.
Well, let's talk about the Republican reaction. You say that as this proceeds, it makes it harder and harder for people to vote for Republicans. What is Republican reaction to both the president's speech and to what appears to be something of a crisis in the McCain campaign?
Well, I roamed the Capitol a little bit after the speech last night, and there weren't a lot of people around, but I did run into a couple of straggling members. They both happened to be Republicans, so I can tell you what two people said. They both thought that the president struck the tone they were looking for, that the president struck the notes that they told the vice president on Tuesday morning they needed to hear. Now, of course, there's a cliche in Washington, the devil's in the details. So at 10 o'clock this morning, bipartisan leaders of the banking committees and the leadership are meeting. They say the intent is to finalize a bill. That doesn't mean they'll do it, but the intent is to finalize a bill. They're saying there's broad agreement on these broad outlines, some of the things you mentioned in the intro. So, we'll see what the details are of all these things. And it's possible they could have it done, you know, by the weekend. Now, as far as McCain is concerned, real quickly, I don't know whether it's a crisis or not for him. I do know one thing. The idea that he's suspending his campaign and coming to Washington, I found pretty interesting. At this stage in September of 2008, there's no such thing as suspending your presidential campaign. He may be coming to Washington to deal with the crisis or take meetings or photo ops or talk to people or solve the problem, but believe me, he's campaigning. So he may
not be. Todd, before we let you go, can you just very quickly, because we just have a few seconds here, sum up where they are on Capitol Hill on this bailout slash rescue plan?
Yeah, going into bipartisan meetings at 10 o'clock this morning, the intent is to finalize a bill. Republican leader John Boehner says no final agreement will come of this meeting, but that we're close. So they're starting to coalesce. I think the president's speech was helpful. I think the fact that both candidates are coming to town is helpful, and everyone's starting to sort of sip from the same pool here.
And they seem to have agreement on CEO compensation, which should make some fat cats, Todd, a little nervous here in New York. Todd Zwillich, Capital News Connection, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Adora.
And we turn now to Takeaway political director Andrea Bernstein, who has some reaction from voters in the very important state of Virginia. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Adora.
So what are you hearing about not only this rescue plan being proposed and debated in Washington, but also about John McCain wanting to suspend campaigning?
Well, I'm hearing a lot from voters that they sort of feel like neither candidate can really solve the problems, that the problems are so big. Nobody's really happy about the proposed bailout, which is a problem for John McCain, because even if an agreement is reached, and in the best case scenario for him, a deal is struck, it's not going to be a deal that these voters are particularly pleased with. No one really wants the $700 billion to go to the banks. And then the other thing is that, you know, there's a lot of people here in Northern Virginia. This is a very sort of educated group, familiar with the ways of Washington. Lots of them work in Washington, and they're pretty skeptical about the whole tactic. Here's a couple of voters. The first one is Karen DeGracia, who is a retiree, and the second person is Cheryl Clements, also a retiree, and they are talking about the debates and the possibility of suspending the debates and the economy.
I think it's silly.
You do?
Yes.
What? Why?
Well, I mean, we still going to have Election Day on the same day. I mean, so what is, how long is he going to suspend it? A couple days or a week or two? I mean, it seems like, you know, he doesn't want to make a stand on something. I don't know. It doesn't seem very grown-up way of dealing with things.
Economics are important to me, and I haven't heard enough from both candidates yet on how we fix this big problem that we're in. So I think we need to work on that. So I'll be watching and listening for the next 40-some days.
Some real skepticism there. And this is an important state, Andrea, which is the reason why you're there, which is it has for decades voted Republican in presidential elections, but Democrats are hoping that it's going to turn blue come November.
That's right. Democrats are making a big play for this area, particularly in Northern Virginia, which has been a growth area under the Bush administration. I'm actually at George Mason University, and a political scientist here, Stephen Farnsworth, was telling me that government under the Bush administration has been one of the biggest growth industries in America. As a result, lots of people have moved here, lots of young people. And the Obama campaign has people out on the commuter train platforms, canvassing the neighborhoods, trying to get all of them signed up to vote, because there are enough new people in this area to potentially make a difference for Obama in November.
Well, Washington cynics, of course, say, you know, the reason the Washington area is prosperous is because the government is able to sort of vote its own prosperity in. I guess I'm wondering about the skepticism in some of those voters that you spoke with. Do they just think that this plan bails out the wrong people, or do they think that it can't possibly work, that this financial crisis that the government is talking about has nothing to do with these people in Northern Virginia?
No, I think that people people do feel it has something to do with them. People are sort of resigned to the fact that something is going to happen, but people are frustrated that it has come to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that whatever solution is offered is not going to be a great one and is going to be costly. Now, they are sort of, I do think that there's a broad agreement that the economy needs to be saved. People are feeling that, you know, all of this money is going because, you know, as lots of people, the word mess. I heard the word mess.
Well,
a lot
let me just
yesterday.
Parse that a second before we go to a break. I mean, so that seems to favor Republicans, that it's come to this would sense that the Republicans are maybe to blame, according to these voters.
Well, I heard people blaming Congress, but more people seem to be blaming the current occupant of the White House.
Andrea Bernstein, you're going to stick with us. You are our Takeaway political director, and you're in Northern Virginia. We'll be back with you for more.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning on this Thursday, September 25th. Many developments on the bailout slash rescue plan being debated on Capitol Hill for Wall Street. John McCain wants to suspend his campaign in light of all of these economic troubles, and he also wants to delay Friday night's presidential debate, the first one, so he can focus on fixing the economy. Barack Obama says Friday night's debate should move forward. Do you think McCain's request is a cynical stunt or the right choice for the country?
Hello, my name is Gamal Saleem. I think the presidential candidate should be able to take more than one task every time, and the debate should go on. I think Barack Obama is right about that.
You know, Barack Obama is a University of Chicago professor, or once was. He can debate himself. I'm sure he would be able to. I went to that
school.
Well,
we'll see. We'll certainly see what happens. We're still, 36 hours away from that debate.
Tell us what you think,
877-8-MY-TAKE, or drop us a note at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We go back now to Takeaway political director Andrea Bernstein, who's in Northern Virginia, and her original mission was to find out how people in that key state are feeling about now, given the fact that they've voted Republican for president for decades, but it appears now that the state is verged to go Democratic this time around. She's in Prince William County, which picked Bush in 2000, but by 2006 gave Democratic Senator Jim Webb needed votes so he could win. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Adora. Prince William County is indeed a very interesting place, and I am certainly not in Pennsylvania anymore. This is a growth area. There are about almost 400,000 people here now. 100,000 of those people have moved in since the 2000 election when Bush was elected. It is Virginia, so it's a state with a lot of military families, a lot of people who work for military contractors, but lots of young people are moving in, lots of minorities, and lots of Latinos. So it's really sort of changing the complexion. Also, I should point out, this is a state that Barack Obama won in the primary by 2-1 over Hillary Clinton. So there are not a lot of people walking around feeling upset about the primary results. A lot of very educated people, people that have a very sophisticated understanding of government. It's one of the reasons why Virginia, which hasn't voted Democrat since 1964, is a state that the Democrats are really targeting in this election. And you hear a lot of people talking about foreign policy as well as the economy. I haven't heard people talk about foreign policy so much since, I think, around the time of the Virginia primary back in February. This is the sort of kind of typical analysis of a Virginia voter. This is a government worker who is a McCain supporter who was talking to me about how he feels that McCain will be on foreign policy.
I think he's a little bit more measured than the current president on a lot of issues. But yet he's, I think he realizes when he needs to be used what we would call soft power and when it's time to turn the ratchet it up a little bit.
And so you describe that as a typical response there for McCain, but how is he doing in the polls?
Well, there was a poll here, not so much of Prince William County, but there was a poll of Virginia by the Washington Post a couple of days ago, which showed Obama ahead, mostly on the strength of people's economic concerns. I also think that one of the things I've noticed talking to voters here is that it's a very savvy group. And they understand the ways of Washington. There are people that are really examining sort of the campaign in a very kind of strategic way. It's a very educated group, and the medium income's pretty high. The medium family income is close to $70,000, so that makes it one of the wealthiest areas in the country. Still very divided. But nevertheless, there's a voter that I was speaking to yesterday who said he was undecided until the choice of Sarah Palin. And he then decided to vote for Barack Obama because he felt it was a political choice. Here he is.
It was probably right after the Republican convention. I saw the vice presidential, the Republican Party vice presidential nominee, as more a political move than one that's good for this country.
But vice presidential choices are always political moves. That's sort of curious to me, Andrea.
Yeah, but it goes counter to McCain's argument that he is putting country first.
Right.
This group of voters, that is how they see this. I mean, I do think that McCain had hoped to reach out to sort of professional voters and particularly professional women. I should point out that Don was retired military, and I met quite a few military and retired military people that counterintuitively were voting for Obama. And one of the things that I kept hearing is that he cares about people like us, speaking about Obama. The last clip I'm going to play is a woman who was undecided, but she was very clear on who was keyed in to her problems.
Well, I don't think it'll be McCain. I'm pretty sure it won't be McCain to be interested in my retirement.
Why do you say that?
Because I haven't heard him, I just haven't heard him say anything that would make me believe that he would. I don't think he would be sensitive to my little measly income. Sorry.
Wow. On the economy, McCain really has a bit of a soft spot there, which is something he's well aware of. What do you think it would take to convince someone like that voter that McCain can handle the economy?
Tough road to hoe. The last 10 days have really been making people think about McCain's 7 houses, his 13 cars, his sort of history on the economy, and whether he can handle it. It's been driving Obama's message for him.
Andrea Bernstein, thank you as always, and we'll be hearing more from you in Virginia.
Thank you.
Andrea Bernstein, our Takeaway political director, reporting from Virginia. And now we turn to Femi Okeh, who's got some headlines for us.
Thank you very much. Just gone 28 minutes past the hour. President Bush, John McCain, Barack Obama, and other legislative leaders plan to gather at the White House this afternoon to talk about the proposed financial bailout plan. The UN's nuclear watchdog agency says that North Korea has banned inspectors from its main nuclear facility. They say it's another sign that North Korea is preparing to reactivate the plant. The State Department is banning US personnel from staying in or even visiting major hotels in Pakistan's capital. This comes after a deadly truck bombing at the Islamabad Marriott on Saturday. Democrats are considering asking Joe Lieberman to leave the party. The former Democratic VP candidate is backing John McCain, and he'd been on a McCain shortlist of VP candidates this year. And that's a look at your news for now.
McCain's being asked to leave the Democratic Party.
Yes.
That's a real shocker.
Do you think?
Lieberman, not McCain.
Lieberman, right.
Lieberman. Oh,
they are the same. I was actually talking to a Lieberman staffer yesterday.
And?
Yeah, well, they don't know where he's going to end up. It's kind of interesting.
But good to watch.
Thank you, Femi.
You're very welcome.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking whether parents are entitled to monitor the websites that their children view online, or if that's an invasion of their child's privacy. Discussions and debates now at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. In a moment, the subliminal messages from the presidential campaign. What do, that's right, fonts say about presidential politics? A comparison in just a moment. But first, explicit messages. Hey, John McCain suspends his campaign, wants to delay Friday night's debate so he can focus on fixing the economy. Is he holding the debates hostage in some sense? Is it a cynical stunt or the right choice for the country? That's the question for you guys.
Hi, this is Christine from Brooklyn. I strongly feel that if Barack Obama pulled out of the debate, they would be crucifying him. They would just be saying, oh, look at this, he's not ready, he's running scared, blah, 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 blah. I know that the financial crisis is very important, but we do really need to hear them.
Who do you want to crucify? Tell us what you think at 877-8MYTAKE or MYTAKE at thetakeaway.org. The McCain tactic, suspending the campaign, pulling out of the debate. What do you think? So, look at the campaigns. There are many different ways of comparing them, but if you actually look at the campaign signs, you'll notice, and with the kinds of money they're spending in this political year, they can afford to do all kinds of designs and all kinds of very well thought out campaigns, and there are two very different fonts being used by the campaign. McCain uses Optima. You can find it on your computer. If you go into Microsoft Word or any other Word program, you'll be able to find Optima. And Obama uses Gotham. Well, what do typefaces mean? How important are they? What kind of information do they convey? We couldn't do any better. I mean, the perfect person to talk about this is here. Emily Oberman, partner and co-founder of the fantastic design studio number 17, is here. In the studio, coming from Brooklyn this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Now, from a design perspective, what does Optima say? That's the McCain font. And what's its history?
Well, Optima was designed by someone named Hermann Zapf. It was designed in 1958. And it's actually based on an old-fashioned kind of font. It's sort of designed to originally look like it was carved. But the thing about Optima is that it's sort of both a serif and a sans serif. Like, so it has thicks and thins, mm-hmm. like a serif,
right.
and no little feet like a sans serif. So it sort of tries to do two things at once. It's a very neither here nor there. It's not quite one font or one typeface or another. Well, it is one typeface, but neither serif nor sans serif.
So from a design perspective, it maybe is a little bit wishy-washy. What about Gotham?
Exactly the words I would use.
Which is the Obama
font. Gotham is a font that was designed very recently by Tobias Freer Jones of Heffler and Freer Jones.
We had him on, actually. His voice was right at the top of the show, actually, talking about fonts for all time. But anyway, go ahead.
He's amazing and brilliant. They both are. And Gotham is actually designed based on sort of the vernacular of signage around the city. And starting in like the 1930s, signs were made cast in steel or bronze or painted on the sides of buildings, made more by draftsmen or regular people than by a designer per se. And Tobias became sort of obsessed with them and began to catalog them, starting with a version of it that he saw in the Port Authority.
But who was his client for Gotham when he made it?
It was designed originally for GQ.
GQ, okay.
And then after a certain amount of time, GQ owned it for a certain period of time, mm-hmm. and then after that, it becomes sort of open to the rest of the world when their license on it runs out.
Right. Well, let me step back for a second. I mean, when I choose a font, okay, I don't know if I'm like, I certainly am not like a designer, but I may be like a lot of people. If I choose a font, it's kind of random. I sort of look and I go, oh, this works for me. This doesn't. This is kind of silly. This isn't quite right. I don't know the story behind it, and I certainly wouldn't know if it had anything to do with GQ or not. I'm wondering if the campaigns or the people responsible for these fonts probably thought this through in terms of the whole message, or if it is kind of random.
I don't think it's random at all. I think really? Certainly with the Obama campaign, they had designers who were hired. And
really?
Yes, I have their names right here. Hold on.
Well, they can afford to hire designers.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the McCain campaign has designers also, because the thing about Optima is that Optima is actually also the same typeface that's used on the Vietnam War Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
So all the names that are carved into the Vietnam War Memorial are also in Optima. And I originally thought it might be a coincidence, but I've come to think it just can't. It can't be.
Right.
What kind of message do you think is inherent in the design of the font itself? So when I'm looking at an Obama sign and I'm looking at Gotham font, what kind of message are they sending me?
Well, to me, Gotham says very, because it's a familiar-looking font, because it's designed based on a very American kind of signage that has been in this country since 1930s, it's something that you see and you immediately feel comfortable with. You immediately feel like you've seen it before, you know it well, but it's also really strong, really clean. It's very wide. It's
so is Gotham font the same font that you'd see on a no left turn sign, for instance?
No. On a no left turn sign, you would see Highway Gothic, which is designed to be read on the highways. It has a different style to it.
But so it's more a sign for like a billboard or sign for a
big message. It's a sign that would say like market.
I see.
Or like there, it's from the 30s originally. The typeface originated in the 30s. And so it's all signs for, you know, sort of very everyday things. And it's also, it has more of the quality of being drawn by a draftsman rather than a designer. Although when Tobias took it on, he turned it into something very lovely. Right. With total design qualities, but it feels very open and very strong at the same time.
All right, so before we go, if the only information you had about Barack Obama and John McCain was the font, how would you handicap this election?
I would have to go Obama. John McCain's font is very, as you said, wishy-washy. It's also a font that in college we were taught as designers to never use. It's just not a beautiful font. It just hasn't translated well over the years. And the style of it is just, it doesn't really take a firm stand. It's very centrist. It's very noncommittal. Whereas Obama's font is very, here I am,
strong,
this is who I am.
Yeah. We should note that the constituency of designers has never been decisive in any political campaign that I'm aware of.
But it's all
information. That's right. Emily Oberman, thank you so much for joining us. Emily Oberman is partner and co-founder of the design studio Number 17. We're talking about the fonts of the Obama campaign. It's Optima for McCain and Gotham for Obama. Go to our website. You can take a look or you can find it in your own word processor. Now, headlines in bold typeface.
Arial 14 font.
All right. Thank you.
Is that okay?
For me, okay.
All right. Good morning to you all. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. President Bush warned last night of, and I'm going to quote him, a long and painful recession, end of quote, if Congress does not pass the $700 billion bailout plan. Lawmakers worked late into the night negotiating the details. John McCain and Barack Obama are both headed to the White House this afternoon for an economic summit on the financial plan. The House has passed a stopgap spending bill that pushes off key decisions until next March, avoiding a final face-off with President Bush. The bill gives $25 billion for automakers and $23 billion in hurricane and flood relief. Delta and Northwest Airlines may become the world's largest airline carrier. Shareholders are expected to approve the merger today. And that's a look at some of the main stories making your news this morning.
Thank you, Femi.
You're welcome.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Robert Ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun.
Don't worry, this is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji. Forget supercomputers or high-tech lasers or satellites. It's the rubber duckies. Yes, the rubber duckies to the rescue of NASA.
NASA?
NASA. Scientists who are trying to understand how glaciers in Greenland are responding to climate change are sending out 90 ducks for some answers. Isn't that right, Celie Martin?
Yes, that is correct.
Celie Martin is a NASA program manager. So explain.
Well, we went up to Greenland in August, and one of our concerns at NASA is that in the 1990s, the mass balance of Greenland was in balance. It was neither losing nor gaining mass. But in the past decade, it's been losing mass at a rate of about 300 cubic kilometers per year. Now, to put that in perspective, the city of New York uses about 1 cubic kilometer of water a year.
Oh, wow.
Just, you know, drinking, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a fair bit of water. It's a fair loss of mass. It's a minor contribution to sea level rise. It's like you know, less than a millimeter a year. But it's the change that's worrying us. It's the acceleration of the glaciers. And one of the things that's happening is that at lower altitudes, we have liquid water on the surface in August. We have lakes that are several miles long. We have small, medium streams that flow along the surface. And these streams tend to disappear into holes, vertical holes in the ice called moulons. And so one of the things we wanted to find out was, where did this water go? And I've been working with a scientist at JPL named Alberto Bihar.
The Jet Propulsion Lab?
Jet Propulsion Lab.
Uh-huh.
But he did not want to get up at 3:45 to be on your program.
Thanks for that information.
Yeah. So Alberto and some of his students put together a high-tech response, which was a can containing a GPS, a global positioning system, and a satellite phone that he dropped down a moulon that was when it burst into open water would have responded. This didn't work. And as a backup, he brought along 100 little yellow rubber ducks. I have one in my hand here, and it says in three languages that there's a reward if you find it. The languages are English, Danish, and Greenlandic.
So essentially, you're going to drop the ducks right on top of the glacier, and as the water, the ice melts and the water flows, you're going to be relying essentially on people finding these ducks.
Yeah. Well, actually, we did it. We did it in August, and we put them directly down these vertical holes, the moulons. And so they're out there. There's a fishing fleet. These are sort of upstream of a bay called Disco Bay, and there's a town called Alulisat.
Where the ducks could perhaps end up, and we'll certainly check in with you as these ducks make their way.
Yeah.
Celie Martin, thanks so much. Program manager
welcome.
In Earth Science at NASA headquarters.
The ducks know where the water goes.
Joy of joys, when I squeeze you, you
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual Insurance, offering auto insurance products to individuals and families who put a premium on doing the right thing. More information at libertymutual.com or 1-800-4-LIBERTY. Responsibility. What's your policy?
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 25th, and we have some headlines for you. Femi?
Thank you very much, Adora. Coming up to 12 minutes to the top of the hour, let me start by quoting President Bush from a warning he gave last night. He said that the entire economy is in danger if the Congress does not pass his $700 billion bailout plan. Lawmakers negotiated details of the plan far into the night. We're not there yet, but we're getting there, said Connecticut Senator Christopher Dodd. Fed Chair Ben Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson appeared before the Senate yesterday. Bernanke said the country was facing grave threats to its financial stability. Paulson conceded the need to cap CEOs' salaries in the proposed bailout plan. And McCain and Obama will meet with lawmakers at the White House in an economic summit today. McCain has suspended campaigning until the financial crisis is settled. That's a look at the main stories making news this morning.
Thank you, Femi. So the question we're asking you, John McCain, because of the economic crisis, wants to suspend his campaign and delay Friday night's debate so he can focus on the bailout plan. Is it a cynical stunt or the right choice for the country? Tell us what you think at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org on our website. So we've got two guests to talk about the things that the president referred to in his speech last night. You may recall, if you saw the speech, he said that because of the financial turmoil, there have been wild swings on Wall Street as money moves from one safe haven to another. And there's also been a freeze on credit, which has affected small businesses. In fact, the Financial Times this morning reports that $100 billion in hedge fund money in the last few days has gone from stocks, where it usually is, into money market accounts, which is unprecedented and very, very unusual. Joining us to talk about both of these phenomena, macro and micro, economically speaking, is Jim Svets, who's the CEO of Muddy Cup. It's a coffee house franchise in upstate New York. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you this morning.
And David Kotok is the chief investment officer of Cumberland Advisors on the phone with us from New York. David, thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
David, first of all, this $100 billion move into money market, how unusual is that?
Extremely unusual. It's part of a pattern which has been underway now for a while and accelerating. And we see it in a flight to quality and a flight to liquidity out of fear. It's extreme in its present condition.
And if it's fear of investing, there's also fear of lending, Jim Svets, and you're noticing that at Muddy Cup, right? What problems have you been having?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are a growing company, and we're doing well. And even in this economic climate, we're hunkering down, and we're going to get through this. But as far as our banks go, we want to grow. We had to put our expansion plans on hold because the banks that we work with won't even look at us as far as lending us more capital as far as growth goes. So we had to cancel new locations that we wanted to do recently.
Well, I suspect, I mean, you've been around for a while, right, Jim? And you have a relationship with a banker. It's probably a first-name basis, right?
Absolutely. They take us to dinner and lunch every so often.
So how did the tone of the relationship change? What was the first indicator that, we're not going to be saying yes to you this time, Jim?
You know, they didn't even actually say no. They just kind of took us to dinner, said, hey, whatever we can do to help you. And then they just said, great, we'll look into it. You know, no real answers from them at this point. And I kind of got a clue that, you know, and then all of a sudden all this credit stuff started coming up on the news. So, and it's really just tough out here on Main Street for small businesses to grow.
And David, when Jim says that, what do you see in the big picture in terms of all this money sloshing around?
Well, Jim's case is one case, and in the macro statistics, you see 1 million of them or 10 million of them. And in fact, the credit markets, the credit operations in the United States have nearly come to a halt. In addition, the pricing of credit is much wider as the spread between riskless types of investments like U.S. Treasury bills and loans or financial instruments like those that would support loan to Jim widens enormously. We reached a point in this riot of fear, in this chaos, in which the short-term U.S. Treasury bill yielded zero because people wanted it regardless of whether or not they would earn any interest.
So they didn't
wanted
care.
To get money
oh,
there.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Almost un-American, David. But, Jim, let me ask you this. It's not just you. Your vendors also have been running into some brick walls, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm noticing just when you talk on the street how tough it really is out here. You know, I have one vendor said that his delinquent list doubled last week. Another vendor said that if it wasn't for my company in our area, they'd have to shut down a couple routes because we were the ones keeping that route going. And these are just comments and commentary on a weekly basis that I'm getting out here. So it really, really is tough. And I said, take the $700 billion and give it to the small business owners around the country and let us grow.
Well, Jim, can't you say to your banker, hey, you know, coffee, people are going to be drinking coffee. You know, come on, this is a good investment.
Well, there's no question about our business model and our success. I mean, that's on the table. You know, the next time I'm going to, it's obviously that I'm buying lunch next time. So
right, exactly. Well, David, yeah. You know, Warren Buffett puts $5 billion into Goldman. Who's going to put, you know, $500,000 into a business like Muddy Cup?
Well, I don't know who puts $500,000 into a business like Moneycut, but if they're a small business, tends to go to local and regional banks. Local and regional banks are having funding problems. The market perceives the risk rising, and so it doesn't want to give the funding, loan the funding, invest the funding to the banker, so the banker has the money to loan to Jim. And this is where the linkages occur, and that's how our credit cycle works. We either expand the credit when the linkages work, or we contract the credit when they don't. We are in a credit contraction, and it has been intensifying. So Jim has his pressure, somebody else their pressure. They then draw back. You said it well when you said, what about the vendors? They have their pressure. Mm-hmm. That's what a credit contraction is about. This massive plan in Washington is an attempt to stop the deterioration.
Let's talk about that, David. Let's just talk about that deterioration, because the president said it last night. If the plan isn't passed, that it's going to get worse. It seems to me, beyond a credit freeze, how much worse can it get, David?
Well, you can have successive failures, and therein lies the second level, because credit contraction means somebody has to have a pain and somebody has to lose. And the more it goes on, the more intense that becomes. And so this is an attempt to be proactive and avoid that. Now, you can point fingers, scapegoat, and they're doing plenty of that in Washington. They know how to do that well. But the fact of the matter is, we need some large liquidity infusion, or we're going to melt down more credit and have more businesses fail.
Well, Jim,
that's the trade-off.
Jim, I can't, you know, we're a nonprofit here. I can't really help you out in the operating expenses
right.
thing, but I can give you about 30 seconds to make a plug for Muddy Cup. I know we do have some listeners in your area. Go, buddy.
That's right. You know, Muddy Cup is a great place to go. We're in Beacon, New York, and Poughkeepsie, New York, and all these great towns in upstate New York. And I love all our customers that support us and a local chain like we are. And I hand it to all the other small businesses around the country and here. We work 15 hours and more, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, struggling, and not because we're trying to be rich like a Wall Street guy, but we're trying to, you know, do something we're passionate about and what we enjoy.
All right, Jim, that's your 30 seconds, buddy. That's your 30 seconds. All right, that's all we can afford today. But, Jim, thank you very much. You said it very, very well. CEO of Muddy Cup Coffee House franchise in Beacon, New York, and David Kotok, Chief Investment Officer of Cumberland Advisors. Thanks to both of you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Interesting discussion.
That's interesting.
We're
big
always,
picture, small picture.
Yeah, big picture, small picture. We're always on at The Takeaway, and Election Day is less than 6 weeks away. We've got you covered on all the coverage you need for the election. Vote 2008.thetakeaway.org.
On Friday night, if the debate happens, and as I said, Barack Obama is perfectly capable of debating himself, I'll be live Twittering that first presidential debate along with Andrea Bernstein and some others here at The Takeaway. You'll be able to join the conversation on our homepage at thetakeaway.org tomorrow night.
And here's today's takeaway.
At this stage in September of 2008, there's no such thing as suspending your presidential campaign,
says Todd Zwillick of Capital News Connection.
So is Todd right? Here's what Lee thinks.
John's cancellation of debate has nothing to do with the ability to do more than one thing at a time. It has to do with the fact of calling the attention of the country to this deep financial situation that we're in. I think it's very important that John McCain realizes that this is indeed a real situation that ranks way above whether or not if he scores 3 points against Barack Obama.
I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its Campaign for American Workers. More at rockfound.org. This is The Takeaway.
President speaks to a worried nation.
Tell me something good.
We've seen triple-digit swings in the stock market. Major financial institutions have teetered on the edge of collapse, and some have failed. As uncertainty has grown, many banks have restricted lending. Credit markets have frozen, and families and businesses have found it harder to borrow money.
Good? I don't think so. The president tells America and the world to hold on while Congress works to pass a bailout in record time. Tell me something. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 25th. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Adora.
Today, Congress is working on that $700 billion plan to rescue the economy or bail it out, depending on who you ask. John McCain has called for the presidential campaigning to stop and to delay tomorrow's scheduled presidential debate while the plan is worked out. We'll talk to one of McCain's senior advisors this morning. Also, North Korea may be reactivating, not deactivating, one of its nuclear power plants. China sends astronauts into space and cloning a giant turtle that's been extinct for more than a century. Those stories are coming up, but first, here are some headlines.
Always good to talk about giant turtles, but as we mentioned, President Bush told the nation last night Congress must act quickly to shore up financial markets.
The government's top economic experts warn that without immediate action by Congress, America could slip into a financial panic and a distressing scenario would unfold.
The negotiations on Capitol Hill continued through the night. John McCain says the nation's financial crisis is issue number one for him.
I'll suspend my campaign and return to Washington after speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative. I've spoken to Senator Obama and informed him of my decision, and I've asked him to join me.
Barack Obama is heading to Washington this afternoon to meet with McCain, President Bush, and other key leaders at the White House, but he's going to keep his campaign going.
Presidents are going to have to deal with more than one thing at a time. It's not necessary for us to think that we can only do one thing and suspend everything else.
McCain has said he doesn't want to debate tomorrow night if the bailout plan isn't passed. After a deadly hotel bombing, the State Department is banning U.S. personnel in Pakistan from staying at or even visiting major hotels in key cities in that country.
A military prosecutor at Guantanamo Bay has resigned. He says his office withheld potentially exculpatory evidence in the case of a detainee. The current chief prosecutor for the tribunals denies it. Delta and Northwest Airlines shareholders are expected to approve a merger today. It will create the world's largest airline. Oil's down near $104 a barrel today, and the Dow and the S&P closed flat yesterday. The S&P opens at 1185.
And the markets look to open flat again today as everybody waits. John McCain wants to suspend his campaign and delay Friday night's debate so he can focus on fixing the economy. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm Paul. I'm from Rhode Island. And anybody who can't multitask really shouldn't be president.
Our listeners, our anti-McCain, very annoyed at John McCain listeners on The Takeaway this morning. Is the decision a cynical stunt or the right choice for the country? Debate or not debate while the economy sinks? Tell us what you think. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Do you multitask?
Yes. How about you?
You have to multitask.
Yes, regularly.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
The government's top economic experts warn that without immediate action by Congress, America could slip into a financial panic and a distressing scenario would unfold.
That was President Bush speaking last night, stressing why he believed that Congress should pass the $700 billion bailout for Washington. The sinking economy, the congressional bailout, and the politics of the campaign are the big stories today. Senator McCain's call to halt his campaign has met with resistance from Senator Obama, who said that tomorrow the first presidential debate should move forward. All of this, again, in the midst of major economic struggles here in the U.S. Tucker Bound is a national campaign spokesman for the McCain-Palin campaign, and he joins us. Welcome, Tucker.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
So why suspend campaigning at this moment?
Well, I think John McCain saw this on pretty clear terms and recognized that we needed to put partisanship aside and make sure that we passed this legislative agreement so that we could bail out. It's not about Wall Street, but also about Main Street. American families, their savings, their homes, their student loans, and in many ways their jobs depend on the effectiveness and the robustness of the American economy. But certainly the loans need to be backed up so the American economy can go forward in a healthy way. We can begin to recover. John McCain's...
Well, Tucker, that's an argument for dealing with the economic crisis. I guess I don't hear an argument in there for actually suspending the campaign. And our listeners this morning have been saying things like, why can't he do two things at once? He should be able to multitask if he wants to be the leader of the free world. We want to hear the debate at this moment in history. What do you say to that?
Well, there are two things that people need to remember, and I don't expect everyone to understand the inside baseball of congressional negotiations, but the Democrats on Thursday, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, were on Capitol Hill saying that they couldn't reach an agreement because the Republican Party seemed bifurcated and that they needed clarity from the Republican Party and that they needed leadership from John McCain. They called on John McCain to come back to Washington and to tell them what to do in very clear terms. The second thing is it's easy to say that the president needs to multitask, and I completely understand that. John McCain is multitasking every single day. But what I don't think Barack Obama may understand is that when you want to put something together as important as this, as quickly as it needs to be accomplished, that I don't know if he has the record to understand that these are very difficult negotiations and they require the credibility of serious public officials.
Okay, Tucker, let me just get one fact from you. If I called Nancy Pelosi's office and said that you said that she called McCain back to Washington, do you think she'd go along with that?
Well, I think that she would, if she told you that she wasn't putting pressure on our congressional delegation, wasn't making public statements.
Well, you said she called him back to Washington. That seemed a little bit over the top.
On ABC World News tonight, Thursday evening, Jake Tapper reported in Harry Reid's terms, in his own soundbite, that John McCain needed to return to Washington and tell us what to do.
All right, just wanted to clarify that. Here's a government employee in Prince William County, Virginia, talking about his reaction to John McCain's decision. Listen to this, Tucker.
It smells like a delaying tactic to me. I'm a little concerned about that. It seems like that's an important event on his agenda, and he should not overlook it, in my opinion.
Tucker, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it would have. I understand the concerns of the American people, and I understand everybody's tracking this election. It's very important. But also, let's remember that more than 100 times, John McCain has challenged Barack Obama to meet him anytime, anywhere, to debate in a town hall-style format. So let's not begin to think that we're trying to delay a debate. In fact, we're hopeful that we can reach an agreement, that negotiations can be sought and found, so that we can debate on Friday night. The idea here is that we need to move with a sense of urgency to make sure that this bailout goes forth. Because if people think that their home loans and their savings don't depend on some sort of action, they're not living in the real world.
And Tucker, I think all of us can certainly appreciate that. There's no question, and there's certainly a process in place that's happening on Capitol Hill at this moment between the administration and congressional leaders. But just given the fact that we are 6 weeks away from a really important election, a very close election, you can certainly appreciate the skepticism of pulling out of the very first presidential debate where American voters are going to get the opportunity to see the two men who are vying to be the next president. You can appreciate the skepticism, can't you?
I understand. I understand that there's a lot of back and forth going on here. But the one true thing is John McCain said, let's get things done. We are charged. Washington is charged with a few simple tasks. And when something as urgent and as necessary as this comes about, it is time for people to put partisanship aside and quit pretending that these presidential campaigns don't have millions and millions of people in their constituency that serve only in the interests of their sound bites and their trail talk, and let's get down there, put that stuff aside, and work a deal for the American people so Main Street can thrive and we can begin to see recovery.
Okay.
That's all he was saying.
Right. Let's talk tactics for a moment. I mean, the McCain campaign and John McCain himself has a reputation for being erratic, maybe shooting from the hip, maybe a bit hot-tempered. I'm just wondering if this decision doesn't smack of a kind of a winging it, shoot from the hip kind of decision, and that maybe the Barack Obama campaign has called your bluff on this one.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting criticism. I certainly don't think that we're hot-tempered around here. I hope not. We seem to be pretty well-mannered. I think that if it's called hot-tempered to come back to Washington and try and fix something as opposed to just giving glorious speeches in front of temples and talking about ceasing the ocean's rise and healing the sick, then I think that perhaps we are a bit hot-tempered. People want things done. People are fired up. And if they think that the presidential campaign can't deter for a day or two to solve one of the biggest economic crises ever to face this country, then maybe we should be on the campaign trail. But I don't think the American people think that. I think Barack Obama thinks that.
Tucker, let me ask you your reaction to some of the latest polls this week showing Barack Obama pulling ahead of the margin of error. How do you respond to when you've seen Barack on national polls 53% and John McCain, 44.
Well, that's an outlier poll. You're talking about the ABC Washington Post poll, which contradicted two other national polls that were released yesterday, the NPR poll and the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, which both were within the margin of error. In our target state tracking that we've been able to compile through all these public polls, you know, the polls are within the margin of error, which you both have to recognize is clearly way ahead of where any Republican should be in this election. This is going to be a very close election,
Certainly. And
it's only because John McCain is a different type of Republican. He outperforms the generic Republican voter or candidate by 10, 11 points consistently, and that's because he's somebody that has said, hey, I will reform Washington. I have a record of doing it. I will work across the party lines because I have a record of doing it, and I'll get things done. That's what the American people need.
All right, but just to parse that for a moment, I mean, that was a fairly astute little bit of spin you gave us there. Being even equals being ahead in this race. How does that work?
Well,
it
equals being ahead, because if you poll Republicans versus Democrat, if you were to go out and say whoever's a Republican pulls the ballot for their party, that would be 40% or therefore, and you have another 10-11% that would pull Democrat. So when you're polling within the margin of error, which means it could be tied, it could be a point up or down, that means that you're outperforming what a Republican should
be doing by
10 points.
So Obama should be ahead, but because he's even, McCain is ahead. That's your logic?
Well, this race is tied, and if anyone thought that the Republican candidate for president would be tied in this election in September, closing in on October, I think that they would have been having their head in the sand for the last 2 years.
Let me get your reaction very quickly to Congressman Barney Frank, who you know is at the heart of some of the negotiations on Capitol Hill, particularly in the House, on this bailout plan. He says it's now clear a deal will pass. This, according to the Associated Press just a few minutes ago.
Okay. Well, I think that's an interesting.
So the debates go ahead tomorrow, then?
I think that right now, if it being clear that a deal will be negotiated, an agreement will be found, is not the same as we have a negotiation, we have an agreement. So I think when we get there, then we can begin to talk about the debate. John McCain wants to debate on Friday night. There was nothing that we would prefer to do more. In fact, I plan on getting on a plane today and flying to Mississippi to go to these debates. That's my plan. I expect that this campaign will go forward if we can reach an agreement, if we can reach a negotiation. But I think everyone can recognize that there is one thing that is more important than this presidential campaign. I hope many things, but certainly one thing, which is that we need to address this financial crisis on Wall Street so it doesn't affect everyone in their homes and around their dinner tables.
Tucker right, Bounds, Tucker. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Thank you, Tucker. You better answer that cell phone there that's going off. It sounds like it's exploding in your pocket there. What's your reaction to the McCain campaign? 877-8-MY-TAKE. That was Tucker Bounds, the McCain campaign spokesman. You've been responding all morning. Leave your response to the McCain decision to suspend the campaign in light of the economic crisis at mytake@thetakeaway.org. That was really interesting.
Very.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. John McCain wants to call off the presidential debate so he can focus on fixing the economy along with lawmakers on Capitol Hill. What do you think of that decision?
This is Dean from New Jersey. This is no political stunt on John McCain's part. This is just John McCain remaining true to form. That's my take.
True to form or cynical, whatever you think, tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
We're going to talk about North Korea now. In June, the Bush administration announced a deal with North Korea to shut down its nuclear weapons program. And the Bush administration was touting that deal as a diplomatic success that now looks short-lived. Contrary to hopes that North Korea would deactivate its nuclear weapons program, today there are indications the program is being reactivated. The International Atomic Energy Agency reported yesterday that international inspectors had been barred from a reprocessing plant just 2 years after North Korea carried out its first nuclear weapons test. Nathan Hodge, a senior writer from Jane's Defense Weekly, joins us now with more. Welcome, Nathan.
Good morning.
So what's really known about what's happening with the nuclear power plants in North Korea?
Everything in North Korea is always going to be shrouded in mystery. And one of the things that everyone who's been watching this has been concerned about is what exactly is going on with North Korea's leadership. For instance, Kim Jong-il has basically disappeared from public view for, you know, over a month. And this has really sparked some concern about exactly who's in charge of North Korea's nuclear arsenal.
And there's certainly lots of rumors about him being ill, having perhaps suffered a stroke or some other kind of great illness that has incapacitated him.
And this definitely plays into some of the speculation that perhaps this is a move by North Korea's leadership to show some kind of position of strength. And really what they seem to be pushing for is to be removed from the State Department's list of state sponsors of terrorism. North Korea believe that it would be delisted if it declared and disabled its plutonium production facilities. But the United States, in return, wants to have some very, you know, intrusive monitoring measures put in place.
And the Bush administration's reported response was that simply the North Koreans are playing a brinksmanship game and they are wanting to extract concessions on what you just mentioned, which is issues about a very tight verification system.
Well, the United States also has a number of other instruments that it can bring to bear here. One of the provisions is also that the North Koreans would receive things like fuel deliveries. This is something that could be withheld potentially from North Korea. And it's important to point out here as well that, you know, the United States has not gone it alone here. One of the reasons that we've had this kind of success, or at least that tentative success, in trying to persuade the North Koreans to disable and dismantle their nuclear program is because of the six-party process. The United States here has depended heavily on assistance from, for instance, China, South Korea, and Russia, all parties to the negotiations with the North Koreans.
Nathan, what, you know, the other component of the nuclear program that's so disturbing in North Korea is its delivery system. It's a manufacturer of missile systems. And I'm wondering if there's any sort of indication that this nuclear development is moving in tandem with some sort of reactivated or more aggressive testing of missile systems.
No, that's an excellent question. And certainly, as has been reported in Jane's Defense Weekly, you know, there is suspicion that North Korea may be preparing for additional ballistic missile tests. Now, whether or not North Korea has actually weaponized a nuclear device so it could be deliverable on a missile, that's a completely different question. There's not a lot of clarity, as far as I'm concerned, about you know, how many devices it may or may not have had in its arsenal. But that being said, yes, North Korea is not just a country of concern because of its potential for building a nuclear arsenal, but for spreading the technology for the delivery of one.
But we could at least take comfort in what you're saying there, that this seems to be still in the political realm, not in the active stage of actual deployment. And so on that subject, do you think that this is more of a distraction or, as you alluded to a moment ago, an attempt by the Korean leadership, if it's in a succession stage or not, to project strength to the region?
Well, either way, if it does decide to resume reprocessing nuclear material, it would be an extremely alarming development. And one of the things that this kind of diplomatic crisis lays bare is that there's a limited amount of focus in foreign policy. Iraq has consumed a tremendous amount of the talent and energies, the resources of the administration here. And really this
and now the economy, right?
Which
goes to the question of timing. The North Koreans.
There are a number of issues of timing here. There's a UN General Assembly going on. We're coming up, I think, on the second anniversary of North Korea's first nuclear weapons test back in 2006. The timing is, and we're coming to the end of the Bush administration. So definitely not very auspicious. Mm-hmm. But that having been said, it's very important. I think both of the candidates in the current presidential race here have said, look, this is something that we really need to revisit. We need to reinvigorate our approach to nuclear nonproliferation.
So not something that clearly is going to be just cleared up sometime.
It'll probably come up in the debates
certainly
on Friday. Sure.
In the debates. Nathan Hodge, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Nathan Hodge is a senior writer from Jane's Defense Weekly. And now we're going to turn to Femi Oke, who's got some news for us. Femi?
Thank you very much. 28 minutes past the hour. President Bush has invited John McCain, Barack Obama, and other legislative leaders to meet at the White House this afternoon to talk about the proposed financial bailout plan. McCain says he's not campaigning until the financial crisis is settled. He wants to delay tomorrow's debate on foreign policy. Obama says a president has to deal with more than one thing at a time, and he'll be ready to face off tomorrow night as planned. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson told Congress yesterday that he's ready to concede on a key sticking point for Democrats. They will limit CEO compensation as part of the proposed bailout plan. California drivers, no more texting while behind the wheel. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed a bill to outlaw text messaging while driving, and that goes into effect January the 1st, 2009. So there's still some time to send some texts and drive. No. That would be bad.
People to do that?
Absolutely not.
That's
never
bad.
Done it ever
that's
before
irresponsible.
In my life.
That's irresponsible.
I do text on the subway, though, occasionally. It seems to go okay.
But you're not driving the subway, are you?
Not usually.
It's not a part-time
job. That would be a bad day.
Yeah.
And finally, a headline that caught my eye. Fake pop-up window study confirms most users are idiots. The psychology department of North Carolina State University planted fake pop-up ads on students' computers to see how they would react. Most of them clicked on the pop-up ad.
No matter what. Even if it said there was like a virus?
If it said you are about to install some malware, they clicked on it, it popped up.
Still.
Need
and you're saying they're idiots?
I didn't say that, but the survey did.
Oh, the survey did. Thank
yes,
you for
I would
me.
Never say that. You're welcome.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking whether parents are entitled to monitor the websites that their children view online, or if that's an invasion of their child's privacy. Discussions and debates now at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. As Capitol Hill figures out what to do about the struggling economy, John McCain says he's going to suspend his campaign and wants to potentially delay Friday night's first presidential debate so he can focus on fixing the economy. You think it's a cynical stunt or the right choice for the country? Barack Obama says a potential president should be able to multitask. What do you think?
Hi, my name is Meg Malloy, and I'm calling from Montclair, New Jersey. And I find McCain's move calling for suspension of the campaign incredibly cynical. And also, it shows us how he would be as president. I mean, you have to be prepared to deal with multiple things at a time. And I think it's a very cynical move.
So there's one opinion. What's yours? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. John?
We turn now to an exciting event that's transpiring and counting down, actually, today in China. Three Chinese taikonauts, that's what the Chinese call their astronauts, are going to blast off into space on a mission that will mark China's first ever spacewalk. It's a small step for man, but perhaps a giant leap for the Chinese space program. Joining us now is Joan Johnson-Fries, who's the chair of national security decision-making at the U.S. Naval War College. Joan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So is this a kind of a revisit of the 60s-era American space program, which was very, very much imbued with a kind of American nationalism as well as a kind of Cold War confrontation in addition to all the science?
Well, it is, in that China certainly read the Apollo playbook and understands all the benefits that a country can get from a manned space program, from prestige to technology. But the Chinese say they're going to do it differently. Their program is very ambitious, but they're executing it in a very prudent, incremental way that they say will leave behind an infrastructure that can be used indefinitely.
The mission is called the Shenzhou 7, and
right.
Hu Jintao told the astronauts, or the taikonauts, as the mission began, "You will definitely accomplish this glorious and sacred mission. The motherland, the people are looking forward to your triumphant return." The entire nation is bound up in this mission, it seems.
Absolutely. It's like the American public watching televisions on the street during Apollo. This is very similar to hosting the Beijing Olympics. This is a source of great pride for them, and it's a source of great credibility for the communist government.
Is it a source of concern, though, to defense analysts looking at the possible capabilities of the Chinese in space should this mission be wildly successful?
Well, 95% of all space technology is dual use, meaning it's of value to both the civilian and the military community. A satellite, for example, doesn't know that the images it's taking is going to be used for targeting or for crop rotation. So, of course, the military is concerned about capabilities, though what's very difficult is it's difficult to tell intentions. They're always very ambiguous.
Well, what kinds of things are you going to be watching for? The spacewalk, I gather, is going to happen on Friday or Saturday. This is a relatively short mission, about 68 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third manned space flight that the Chinese have done. What are you going to be paying attention to?
Well, this is the Chinese have an official and approved three-part program. The first part is to prove capabilities, and this mission is part of that. Once they are able to do an EVA, then they can work towards docking, and that will take them to the second part of their program, which is a small space lab in orbit. And then the third part is a large space laboratory or space station that they aren't able to do until they have a new heavy launch vehicle. So right now, I'm going to be watching for the spacewalk because the Chinese are using a Chinese design and manufactured spacesuit. And that's very difficult. That'll be a big technical space step forward for them. The other thing I'm watching for is they say that they're going to allow foreign journalists at the launch and to show the spacewalk live. If they do that, that will really indicate more confidence in their own program than they've shown in the past.
So the spacesuit is of Chinese design, but the rockets and the vehicles themselves are based on Russian designs. Are Russians going to actually be involved in the mission itself?
Well, in fact, the Chinese hardware is Chinese-built, but it is built on Russian designs. The Chinese are very proud to say they've done much of the work on their own because no one would work with them. Now, it's interesting for this mission, the Russians have said they will be there as backup to help them with the EVA, which I think indicates an interesting potential for a closer Russian-Chinese space partnership.
Joan, what do you think the Chinese have learned from the U.S. space program's ups and downs in the last decade or so?
Well, there's kind of two parts to that. Technically, they've learned a great deal from the U.S. just by open source literature and watching how we operate. But in terms of what they've learned of how not to do things, I've had some interesting conversations in China with their spacecraft designers asking me how it is that NASA officials get Congress to support them. So I think they're running into the same kind of issues that we do in terms of why manned spaceflight from some people. But I think what they've also learned is not to do it in fits and starts. If you're going to do it slowly, do it prudently, but leave behind an infrastructure that can be used, that you don't have to constantly start over and reinvent the wheel.
Well, certainly interesting technology on display on this Chinese mission. But as you say, Joan Johnson-Fries, it's in a sense baby steps for a manned space program on the part of the Chinese that you'll be watching closely. Thanks for joining us, Joan.
Thank you.
Joan Johnson-Fries is the chair of national security decision-making at the Naval War College, talking about a Chinese mission that is counting down for a spacewalk this weekend. And now, headlines from Femi Oke.
Thank you very much, John. Just coming up to 21 minutes to the top of the hour. President Bush, John McCain, Barack Obama, and other legislative leaders plan to gather at the White House to talk about a financial bailout plan this afternoon. If you take a look at the website Forbes.com today about the big bailout, you'll see an interview with a Treasury spokeswoman about the $700 billion figure that the Treasury would use to buy up bad debt. The spokeswoman says, I'm quoting her here, it's not based on any particular data point. And she says, we just wanted to choose a really large number. End of quote.
Huh.
That's pick a figure, any figure. Meanwhile, as we move on, North Korea appears to be making good on its threat to reactivate a key nuclear plant. The UN's nuclear watchdog agency says that inspectors have been kicked out and UN seals have been removed. A U.S. military prosecutor at Guantanamo Bay has resigned. Lieutenant Colonel Daryl Vandervelde says that his office suppressed evidence that could have cleared a detainee. South Africa's parliament is expected to vote in ANC Deputy President Halama Motlanthani, and he will replace Thabo Mbeki, who was fired by his own party earlier this week. Motlanthani will actually be the president until spring 2009, when the general elections will take place. Who's the interim president?
He's more of a caretaker.
Absolutely.
People suspect that Zuma will be the big candidate.
And the idea behind Zuma not being president right now is he doesn't hold elective office right now, mm-hmm. and he wants to go in with a really big bang, a big campaign,
right.
get lots of publicity. That's the general thinking from analysts in South Africa.
You know, Google is a really big number.
It is?
It is, yeah. Actually, bigger than 700 billion.
Do you think?
But anyway, go ahead.
I do love that quote. We just wanted to choose a really large number, says the Treasury spokeswoman. Mm.
That's what I say when I have my salary negotiations here at WNYC.
And how does that work out for you, John?
It doesn't really work out very well.
Me neither. I tried that too. Yeah.
Thank you, Femi.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Adora Udoji.
And I'm John Hockenberry. Now, pay attention closely here. If you saw the movie Jurassic Park, you know they restored extinct dinosaurs by taking blood out of preserved ancient mosquitoes and actually cloning new dinosaurs and creating Jurassic Park. Well, that's science fiction. Science fact is taking place down in the Galapagos, where a long-extinct sea turtle may be resurrected from the dead because of the discovery of some live DNA thought to be extinct. Joining us now is Michael Russello, who's assistant professor of biology at the University of British Columbia in one of the beautiful, most beautiful places in the world, the Okanagan Valley. He joins us from British Columbia. Michael, thanks for being with us.
No problem.
Tell me about how it has nothing to do with Jurassic Park, but it is an attempt to restore a species using a captive breeding program. Where did you find the DNA, and where are you going to put it to bring this species back alive?
Well, great question. And yeah, essentially what we did is we found evidence of what was once thought to be an extinct species of Galapagos tortoise. And it wasn't that we went to the island that it was found on when Darwin visited back in the 1800s. It was actually finding that the DNA in individuals that live as far north from that island, on a different island, really as possible. And so the way this happened was we actually went back to 200-year-old museum specimens and were able to extract DNA and compare that to a large database of DNA samples and genetic analysis of all the living species of Galapagos tortoises. And with that, we were able to find individuals on this very northerly island that shared as much as 70% of their genome with the extinct species.
So it's kind of dormant, but the DNA is there in the genome of these living species, and your theory is that by selectively breeding and sort of favoring this 70% of the extinct tortoise, you might actually restore the extinct species.
Absolutely, and there's.
I can't believe I got that right.
You absolutely did, and there's a wide body of theory that suggests this is possible. And so essentially, what we'll do is we're going back out there in December to this very northerly island, and we're going to sample the DNA from over 1,000 individuals that we haven't looked at before. Those individuals that show genetic signatures of this extinct species will be brought into captivity, and there will be a targeted breeding program to continually accentuate and accumulate what is the genetic makeup of this extinct species.
Now, a lot of people working in genetics work with the fruit flies, and they propagate pretty quickly. Tortoises don't do anything very quickly, Michael. You're worried this might not happen in your lifetime?
There's a good chance that it may not. That's a biological reality.
I see.
Absolutely. But
thank you for being so candid about that. That's really sweet. Why would you ever leave the Okanagan Valley of British Columbia for any reason whatsoever? It's so beautiful out there.
Every once in a while, there's a reason.
Well, this is great. Good luck to you. When is the first sort of milestone where we might know if this will work?
Probably early next year when we go out and we sample all, we sample 30 individuals from this northerly population. There's over 2,000 there. So we'll have a good sense of just how much of the genetic essence of this extinct species actually is out there.
Well, it's a fabulous story. Michael Russello, the story is turning the living species of tortoise Isabella into the extinct species of Floriana using selective breeding. Michael Russello is assistant professor of biology at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual Insurance, offering auto insurance products to individuals and families who put a premium on doing the right thing. More information at libertymutual.com or 1-800-4-LIBERTY. Responsibility. What's your policy?
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 25th, and Femi Okeh has just joined us with some headlines. Femi?
Thank you very much. It is 12 minutes to the top of the hour. President Bush warned last night that the entire economy is in danger and Congress must act quickly to pass his $700 billion bailout plan. Lawmakers negotiated details of the plan far into the night. Senator Chris Dodd chairs the Senate Banking Committee. He says they're getting close, but not there yet. McCain and Obama will meet with lawmakers at the White House in an economic summit this afternoon. McCain says he's suspending his campaign until the financial crisis is settled. Democrats are considering asking Joe Lieberman to leave the party. The former Democratic VP candidate is backing John McCain. Delta and Northwest Airlines may become the world's largest airline carrier. Shareholders are expected to approve a merger today. It would be the third major air carrier combination in 6 months. And finally, we can do it. Just me and you and a little love. Thank you, Sir Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney will be playing live in Tel Aviv tonight.
Why is that news?
Well, it's 43 years after the Beatles were banned from Israel.
Banned?
Yes, they were banned because they were believed to corrupt the youth of Israel at the time. It was back in the 1960s. Now he's still creating a bit of a problem because there are many people in Israel who believe that he shouldn't be visiting until peace in the Middle East is finally secure. And Sir Paul says that, actually, I just want to try and represent peace and bring people together through My music.
And corrupt the youth.
He's performing tonight. I think actually one commentator said our youth will probably corrupt him now. Times have changed. If he's lucky.
Thank you, Femi.
That's very, very funny. Anyhow, today as the bailout plan for Wall Street, or rescue plan, depending on who you ask, moves forward, John McCain says he wants to suspend his campaign and to delay Friday night's scheduled first presidential debate so he can focus on what's happening on Capitol Hill. Obama says we've got to learn how to multitask if we want to run the free world. So do you think McCain's decision is a cynical one, or do you think he's just being a responsible politician?
Hello, my name is Elaine Bennett, and I'm calling from New Jersey. What I would like to see is for Senator McCain and Senator Obama to keep the debate on Friday, but to actually debate the bailout and the issues surrounding it. That's my take.
Tell us what you think. Tell us your take. Give us a call, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or drop us a note at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We do know that today both John McCain and Barack Obama will head to Washington to join lawmakers and meet with President Bush related to the rescue plan for Wall Street, that $700 billion they're talking about. John McCain says he won't show up for tomorrow's foreign policy debate unless the bailout plan passes. We're joined live again by Takeaway Political Director Andrea Bernstein, who's in Northern Virginia. Her originally just to get the temperature of voters there, but of course now it's been expanded to get a sense of what voters are thinking about the presidential campaign in light of the economic issues. Andrea, it's not necessarily been a good week for John McCain in the polls. The latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll put Obama at 48 and McCain at 46. And we spoke earlier this hour with McCain spokesman Tucker Bounds, who had this to say.
In our target state tracking that we've been able to compile for all these public polls, you know, the polls are within the margin of error, which you both have to recognize is clearly way ahead of where any Republican should be in this election.
Andrea, did you get that logic?
Yes, they're saying that they're doing better than when people are asked a generic question about how do you feel about a Republican, they answer less in a less friendly way than they do about John McCain. But I think that if you take a look at all of the projections and all of the polls, and, you know, what's happened in the last week and a half is extraordinary, because I've been out with voters. Last week I was in Pennsylvania. This week I'm in Virginia. And one of the things I'm realizing is there's so much information out there. There's the internet. There's 24-hour cable. There is Twitter. There is so much that it is very hard for the campaigns to get their messages through to voters through traditional television ads. There's also TiVo, so people skip the ads. But the last 10 days have been just trumpeting Barack Obama's message that he's been trying to get across, which is that the Republicans are responsible for the economic mess and that John McCain would be a third term of Bush. So that message is really sinking in with voters. And if you look at the projections, morning.
One second, Andrea. You say that message is – how is it being trumpeted exactly? I don't quite understand.
It's being trumpeted by the economic news. It's making people
the news
think
itself.
About their economic situation. So it's not like anybody is making that point directly, but that's what, you know, what the voters are telling me and clearly the pollsters that they're coming away with. So if you look at what is going on with all of these election polls, and we have on the takeaway.org, we have a chart which shows everybody's projections. So yesterday morning, and it had been, you know, a lot of projections the week before had been McCain winning the electoral vote. Now, just about everybody's is Obama. So that's what they woke up to yesterday morning. I know they were dismissive of the ABC Washington Post poll as being an outlier. That's the one they were trumpeting 10 days ago because it showed women going for McCain after the convention. So people have sort of selective memories about what polls they like and dislike. So the McCain people felt, you know, clearly we got to do something to shake this up, to break through, to change the storyline. And so they did one of these moves, just like the Sarah Palin move, just like suspending the Republican convention for Hurricane Gustav, hoping that it would reinforce their message of being the sort of nonpartisan putting country first.
But you've certainly run into a lot of skepticism about that.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I'm in Northern Virginia. This is a very savvy voting population. Many of them work in Washington, so they're very familiar with the ways of Washington. And quite a few of them are saying, well, fine, even McCain supporters, let him go work in Washington if he wants to do that. They don't care if he suspends his ad. They don't care if he suspends his fundraising or the partisan rhetoric. But they do want to watch the debate. And people are saying, yes, even his supporters are saying, well, I'd really like to hear more from him now, not less. So that is the conundrum. And then if he does, if there is a deal, well, you know, people are unhappy that there has to be a deal in the first place. So it's not so clear a thing as going to help out hurricane victims. Working on economic bailout is not a happy situation for most Americans, that there even has to be one.
And there's also kind of a political conundrum, isn't there, here, Andrea, which is Barney Frank, who is at the heart of the negotiations in the House around this bailout package. He said earlier this morning that he thought that they, you know, were very close to a deal, and should one happen before McCain gets there. I mean, you have a thought on that. Doesn't that kind of take him out of that position of leadership?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what the Democrats are furiously trying to spin, that we're putting this thing together without him. McCain said, well, I'm going to go after the Clinton Global Leadership Forum in New York this morning. So McCain's going to make his speech in this morning about climate change, and the Democrats in Washington are trying to say, look, it's a done deal without you, or it's almost a done deal without you. So this is furious spin machine. So, you know, McCain took this incredibly risky gambit. He's done it twice, and it's paid off for him. I think that this one is much more complex. But on the other hand, they do need to change their narrative. They need to get McCain back looking as this sort of, you know, nonpartisan guy that can get things done in Washington. That's what they want people to be talking about, not the economy.
On that story, then, you listened to Tucker Bounds, the interview that we did at the top of this hour. What was your impression of his tone, the message, his response to some of our questions?
Well, I think that's what they heard, you know, I think it's what we heard in the selection of Sarah Palin. And, of course, you know, Sarah Palin had bad reaction in the first few days, and then it turned out the voters liked her. So the jury is still out on how all of this plays, and, you know, there is this sort of delayed reaction. But I do think that this one carries a significantly more risk for John McCain because he is going to work on an economic package that people are blaming the Republican Party for having brought on in the first place to a large extent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Andrea Bernstein, The Takeaway's political director, reporting from Northern Virginia.
We are always on at The Takeaway. That is the truth. Election day is less than 6 weeks away. We've got you covered completely. You'll find our complete coverage. Andrew's even talking about it on our election site. Vote2008.thetakeaway.org.
Today, we've got new tools for following the candidates, an electoral college prediction tracker, video from new voices across the country, and much more.
There's even people asking for $700 billion. How does it sound when you ask for it, not Hank Paulson? Here's today's takeaway.
China certainly read the Apollo playbook.
That's Joan Johnson-Fries from the Naval War College talking about China's first ever spacewalk this weekend.
And speaking of walking, we're asking what you think about John McCain's decision to suspend campaigning and delay Friday's debate.
Good morning. My name is Jill Coelho. I live in Belmont, Massachusetts, and I feel very strongly that McCain and Obama should debate, because if they have important ideas for economic solutions to this crisis, it's much better that we all hear them than that they be discussed only behind closed doors.
Let us know what you think. 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its Campaign for American Workers. More at rockfound.org. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.